Ben didn't answer his phone or respond to his messages all that day. When I finally reached him, when he picked up the telephone at last, there was a huge lag in response time to everything I said. Long seconds went by before he either answered my questions or simply asked, "What did you say?" Ben spoke slowly as if he were trying to keep everything under control. Oh, no. Pulse racing, I drove over to his apartment and found him sitting on his couch, writing in his spiral notebook. "Ben," I said, "what's going on? Are you okay?" He didn't answer me. "Ben?" "Ben!" He looked up at me and nodded his head. He watched as I walked past him into the kitchen, which I could see was filthy again. Dishes in the sink, overflowing garbage, and a couple of roaches crawling over the kitchen counter. I grabbed a paper towel and crushed the roaches with much more force than was necessary. I was fueled by disgust, by fear. I stepped as far away from Ben's sink as I could and opened the doors underneath to grab the can of Raid. One more roach in there. I sprayed it. I sprayed everywhere. Ben sat on his couch watching me wordlessly. Then I noticed the electric stove was still on. One of the burners was glowing red hot. "Ben, you left the stove on," I said as I turned the knob to off. "How could you do that?" Ben got up and followed me into the kitchen. He looked at me, raised his eyebrows, then shrugged his shoulders. "Honey, you can't leave the stove on. That could be very dangerous." Ben shrugged his shoulders again. I realized then that he wasn't talking to me. It was as if he were giving me the silent treatment of a pouting child. "Hey," I said, "talk to me. What's going on?" But he didn't look angry. This wasn't a silence born of anger. He just wouldn't talk. Ben went over to his fridge, took the dry erase message board from the door, and began to write with a marker. "I am going to go job hunting today," he wrote. He pointed to the message with his finger and looked at me. "What is this? Is this some sort of superstition?" I had no idea what he was thinking. All I knew is that it was freaking me out. "Ben," I said, keeping my voice as even as I could, "it's too late to look for a job today. The day is gone. It's 5 o'clock. He shrugged his shoulders, then wiped off the word "today" and wrote "tomorrow." He pointed to it again. I took a good look at my son, taking inventory. Wrinkled, dirty clothes. Perhaps the second or third day in a row he had worn them. Hair, filthy. Face, unshaven. Eyes, frighteningly vacant. "Ben," I said as calmly as I could, "stop this. Talk to me." He wrote some more. "I can't." "How are you going to get a job if you won't talk?" He shrugged again. "And you can't look for a job like that. You're a mess. Ben, you have no food. You have no money. You were supposed to have a job by now. What have you been doing?" Ben pointed to the board again and shrugged. Then I spotted his pillbox on the crowded kitchen table. 3 more compartments still filled in with his pills. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. That added up to 5 days now, I calculated, with no medication at all. I pushed past Ben to the fridge and looked in. The food he'd filled it with over a week ago was now in various stages of decay. Uncooked, untouched, and moldy. Had he even forgotten to eat? "Maybe this is it," I thought. "Is this bad enough for him to be admitted to the ER? What am I supposed to do now?" I did the only thing I could think of. I treated him like a toddler. "Ben, I can see you don't want to talk to me. All right. I don't know why, and you don't want to tell me. But your place is a mess, and I can't keep my promise to give you food money if you don't keep your promise to clean up." "Not fair," he now scribbled. "Maybe not," I said, "but that's what I've decided to do. And more important, Ben, you're not taking your meds. Have you taken them at all since you moved in?" He stared at me blankly.